Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It's the fight in.
Oh, that was really interesting, mate, yeah.
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of the Extra Inch Podcast. I'm your host, Windy, and this time I'm not joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi, or my tactics guy, Nathan A. Clark, but I've got two youth football experts with me. Firstly, Carl, who's been on the podcast with me before. Hello, Carl.
Hi, guys.
And I'm with Kai Barrett as well, who's West Ham United youth follower on Twitter. Hello, Kai.
Hi, guys. Good evening.
Before I introduce them both properly, as you may have heard in our previous two episodes, we've got ourselves a sponsor for the next couple of months. And it's a sponsor specifically chosen as it might be of interest to our listeners. So we've teamed up with OneFootball, which is a football app. It's available in the App Store and Google Play. You can personalise your newsfeed, you can set up notifications, and it's got a nice user-friendly interface that makes it easy to keep up to date with transfer news, scores and stats. It's all in one central place. So check out the OneFootball app if you get a moment and let us know what you think of it. So we've invited Carl and Kai onto the Extra Inch because they're both experts on youth football, and there's definitely an appetite for talking about youth football, I think, at the moment, particularly with Jadon Sancho being in the England team. So let's start off with Kai. Kai, can you tell us a bit about yourself and your interest in youth football and how it's developed?
Hi, guys. My name's Kai Barrett. I run the WHUFC youth account on Twitter, and I've done that since November 2014 with the website as well. I'm just a guy who's passionate about youth football. I work closely with Youth Hawk. I've also contributed for websites like Off the Post News. And it's just, like I said, it's just a passion of mine. I don't think there's any better feeling than supporting a club when you see a player who's come all the way through the academy and just making the first team. And some of the stuff I do, I write about youth football, and I'm involved with sort of keeping statistics and that. And yeah.
That's awesome. And Carl, we've podcasted together before, but give us a bit of background about yourself and your interest in youth football and how you keep up to date with it all.
Well, I'm not as impressive as Kai, but to be honest, I started following your youth updates on your blog back in the day, Chris, and really interesting, and got me into it. I've always been involved in coaching for cricket and youth work. And as Kai said, I don't think there's anything better really than just finding out, just seeing someone break through into the first team and finding out the development process behind what makes someone such a quality player. So then started paying attention more to youth football, going games, and then there you go. You just find yourself in it and
That's exactly it. So what we're going to do, we're going to have a bit of a deep dive on youth football. So we're going to split this into two parts. And in the first part, we're going to focus on the changes in academy football, which have led to player output improving generally and what this might mean for English football. And then we're going to think a bit about the reason why so many young players are moving abroad and what English clubs could consider doing differently in order to keep them. So to start off with the changes in academies, I think, Kai, can we start with you? If we can get you to talk a little bit about the Elite Player Performance Plan, which was introduced in 2012. There's one question in particular from Bardi, who is my usual sidekick on this podcast. He wanted to know the rules regarding recruiting youth players, the fact that it's no longer based on geography. Are you able to give us any information about that and talk about the EPPP in general?
Yeah, of course. Obviously, like you said, it's introduced in 2012. There was sort of a big reboot because initially, back in the day, the competitions were split into under-17s and under-19s up until around 2004 before it came under-18s and reserves. And 2012, one of the most notable changes was the whole reserve system was scrapped and introduced with under-21s. And like as Bardi's asked, changes in sort of geography and recruiting players, it's changed a bit. So academies are now ranked. There's four categories. Category one's highest. So that's you guys, that's West Ham, that's Arsenal, all the big teams. Well, not necessarily big teams. And then category two has got, you've got a bit of a range. There's like teams like Watford all the way down to Colchester. So it's a bit of a mix. And then obviously category three, category four. And basically it's quite a controversial thing. Clubs that have a higher category rating, they're able to recruit young players from further afield than it was before. So, for example, Tottenham might be able to get a player from Cambridge without sort of less hassle, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. It changes things a bit for those clubs in regions where there's no other clubs nearby, I guess, because it means that they don't necessarily get first dibs on those players they would have done previously. So it's interesting in that respect. What have you made, Carl, of the changes that this has led to in the kind of the player development? Have you noticed a discernible difference between the quality of player coming now since before that would have been an affair?
Yeah, so I think so. As you know, we sort of revamped our academy really back in like 2005. I think Chelsea did something similar, and Man City. So I think that was where it all somewhat started. I think England then, the FA also changed their coaching structure because I think they realised there was sort of a lack of coaches compared to other countries. I think England had something like one UEFA A, B or pro coach per, I think it was 812 players compared to Spain and other countries had it, the ratio was more like 1 to 150 or 1 to 19 or something like that. So we were really lagging. So I think the FA focused a lot of money towards improving the coaches and let the clubs focus on improving their players with the revamp. And then I think that was all around 2005. And as the players improved, I think then the EPP came in and it basically sort of funneled any player that was in any other club towards the best academies. And made things a lot easier. So you're already getting the quality coaching. Then the EPP comes in, takes even good players in other like lesser clubs and helps get them to the top clubs. And then you're creating even better players. That makes sense. So it's just it's like the perfect storm. And so you're getting quality coaches, quality players, quality grassroots coaching initially. And I think you just see it in last summer where finally we just started winning everything in international level. And you could see the beginnings of it coming through when like Chelsea were winning all their club competitions at academy level. I think we've even won a few. I know Man City have won a lot. And it's just come to a head now, and we're just sort of dominating international football at youth level.
So clearly there's a lot of benefits for the output of England as a nation in terms of the best players are at the clubs with the best coaches and the best facilities. And I think it's difficult to argue with that.
Mm.
But there are other issues caused by that. So we're going to talk a lot more, probably in part two, about opportunities for young players. But do you feel like the changes, Kai, were the right changes to make? And do you feel that we've got the best structure that we could have in this country for developing the best young talent?
Well, yeah, as Carl said, as well as developing players, it's about developing coaches. And that's obviously an important thing because you can have all the best players in the world, but without the right coach, you can't really get the best out of them. And like you said, we're starting to see that, obviously, with Gareth Southgate and the World Cup. But before at youth level, the under-17s winning the World Cup with Steve Cooper last year. And there's the under-20 World Cup and all these things going on. Youth level, we're seeing lots as players sort of now. They're back in the 2000 generation, currently under-19s, they were like 12 when this happened. They were at that age where the impact was sort of, it was on them, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And each year, as we get in the new generations internationally, we're getting some really good players coming through. The 2001s, they were unlucky in the Euros a few months ago. I was lucky enough to go watch some of the games there. And obviously it was just sort of a luck of a draw type thing. Because you look at countries such as Holland, who knocked them out. They've had that sort of going for quite a long time. And obviously the senior team might not be as good as it is now, but anyway, going off on one. I think in the end, the whole EPP thing, it does have its flaws, but I do think that it is sort of the right direction going forward, and we're starting to have the benefits starting to see them pay off.
Yeah.
I suppose, sorry, Carl, yeah, go for it.
I just want to quickly add to that, like you said about the improvement of the players and Kai touching it. When we, for example, we developed our academy in 2005, I think the first people who would have felt the benefits of who were under 16 at the time would have been the Mason age group. You know that, Chris?
Yeah, that's right.
Though we already saw how much better they were than their predecessors. And ever since then, you can just see the quality the number of quality players and the actual ability of these players that are coming through has just improved with every single age group I've noticed. Obviously, some age groups are better than others in that respect, but you can see the quality as the younger age groups have had more of the benefits of that quality coaching. That makes sense? So,
oh, yeah, that makes total sense. I feel like one of the main changes I noticed in that Ryan Mason age group, we'll call it that for shorthand, was that there were players who weren't big, they weren't quick, they were just small, slight guys who are happy to take the ball in tight situations and do things with it to get themselves out of trouble and pass the ball. And that was the first time we'd really seen like three or four players who were a bit smaller than others in one team, and the coaches were happy to chuck them in because they were so technically advanced. It wasn't a problem to have them in there. I'm just interested, Kai, is that the same at West Ham? Is there a philosophy there where players don't have to be a certain size in order to make it? They can be a bit smaller and they still get trusted to play?
Yeah, I think definitely we've sort of had quite a mix these last few seasons. As you said, quality, I'd say it's improved. Some of the few scholarship intakes we've had over the past season, there was groups such as the 2015 one, where it had lots of Reece Oxford, Jamal Hector Ingram, Vashkon Nerfil, and I'm going to say right now the current under-16s we've got. I've got high hopes of that group, but obviously I won't say too much right now. Just think, don't want to jinx it. But we've sort of seen like a difference. So I think there's always been like a steady quality. Obviously, there's been some groups where it's nothing to write home about, but there's one or two good players in there who are in with a chance. And it's more sort of about consistency. And in a way, I'd rather have five groups in a row who are all, don't get me wrong, good players, but no, not elite class just yet, but they've got the potential to become that, rather than one sort of group every 5 years where it's just a big horde of excellent players that don't sort of really gel together, if that makes sense.
We've definitely seen that with Spurs in terms of, you know, back in the day you'd get one player perhaps who had potential to make first team squads, and they would throw everything at that one player and they'd do everything they possibly could to make him the best he could be. And now the quality is spread so much more thinly in a good way. But it comes with its own challenges. And, you know, we've been talking about how the elite player performance plan is such a good thing, and it surely is for English football. But there are some downsides, and one of them that I'd like to get your thoughts on, initially is the Premier League 2. So this is what essentially replaced the Reserve League. Originally it was an under 21 league. It was then made under 23. And I've had numerous issues with it, and it's partly the way that Spurs use it. So, Kai, you may or may not be aware that Spurs don't ever, or very, very rarely, include first team players in those matches. So even if we've got players coming back from injury, we don't tend to throw them into these games to get them back into the swing of things, which, you know, that's a strategic decision and fine. But we also experiment quite a lot, and we tend to not use the loan system as much nowadays, and we stick players in the PL2 instead. And even if they're not quite at the required level to make first team grade, they'll get game after game after game in that league, presumably to boost their profile, to give them an opportunity to progress, which is admirable in a sense. But it does mean that you get a lot of the younger players who are clearly good enough to step up on the bench or not used until a year later. Interested to get your thoughts on how the PL2 works for West Ham. How do they tend to use it? And do you think their use of it is a good thing?
I'm going to be honest, like you, I'm not a huge fan of it. And when we rarely sort of include first team players. Every once in a while, yeah, we might do, but it's not a regular occurrence. And I suppose that's a good and a bad thing. But it's just like I said, with the loan system, I would rather have under 23 players out on loan doing well and playing. But you've got to look at it not just from the club's perspective. The player, they need game time, and we have been dreadful with the loan system. There's one player I'm going to highlight, Moses Mukasey. If you know me, you know I'm a big fan of him, defensive midfielder. He is currently 22, and the only loan he had was last season, and that was at Plymouth, not counting the month he spent at Chelmsford. And in the past we've had players who've reached 21 and they've had no first team appearances at any level, because they've been rotting in the Premier League 2 or the under 21 league or wherever it is. And there's no sort of real yet. Well, no, Josh Collins has been alright with loans, actually. But it's sort of... So there's...
Out of curiosity, why does West Ham not send the players on loan? Because we know at Spurs, there's Pochettino preferred to keep them coached under his sort of regime, so to speak. So our better players would have to stay under him and wouldn't go on loan, and would be seen to be as basically a nail in the coffin if you were sent on loan before. So I know that was Spurs' policy, but why do you think West Ham aren't sending their players on loan?
You know, I'm not too sure. It's like, it would be fine if there was more people getting a chance. But I'm thinking like Sam Allardyce, he was a manager who never sort of really wanted to give you opportunities. And if it was a loan, it was to like the Conference. Nothing wrong with that, of course, but it's not the sort of level for sort of older players. And just going back onto that sort of point, there's people are getting to the age where they had no first team experience and they find it hard to find a club, and it has the impact on them, not just football wise, but I think mentally as well, because it's hard for them to find a new club and things can spiral. And you know, this has been the case with once in a while with players, sadly. But it's not sort of really competitive anymore, the PL2, because you get some clubs who try and field the youngest team possible. And if you're someone who doesn't pay attention to the PL2, you think, oh, that's a great thing. They've got a young team, they're given all the opportunities, but it's more of a competition to who can sort of play the least.
I think the exact same thing, by the way.
That's yeah, the exactly, yeah.
It feels like it's a competition who can play the youngest side to say, oh, look, our side is this young and beating that side. But in the end, there's no actual competition because there's no older players playing. There's no real first team that's in there. It's just 17 and 18-year-olds, and it's just a slightly stronger... I don't even know if it's a slightly stronger version of the under-18s, because it's just kind of like the strongest under-18s with the left-behind under-23s. So it's not that competitive. It's just a very strange situation going on in PL2 at the moment.
Seeing, just following on from that, I think there's also been a rise statistically in under-16 players being used in under-23s since the introduction of the Premier League 2 than there was before. And I think usually at most clubs there will be an under-16 player who will have already made his under-23 debut. We had two last season. We had a couple the season before that. Obviously, Reece Oxford was captaining the under-21s when he was 15. So it's very, like, what's the word? There's sort of no... I think the whole thing, to sum it up, I think is pointless.
It's a really difficult one because it's... You know, I've been incredibly critical over the last 2 years of the PL2, and it's partly been Spurs' management of that particular league. And, you know, from my perspective, it seems almost that the coaching that goes on at that particular level at Spurs is problematic as well, because I've seen players stagnate so regularly. But on the other hand, it's really difficult to think of an alternative. And one potential alternative is what they do in Spain, where they have B teams which enter the football league, or the equivalent in Spain, lower down the structure. And we've kind of taken one step towards that with the Checkatrade trophy. So clubs can enter an under-21 team into the Checkatrade. And Spurs, for example, last week beat Gillingham 4-0. We had 16, 17-year-olds playing in this match. And it's difficult to imagine that that's not a great opportunity for them. You know, they're playing against men who are experienced, who've been playing in the Football League for a number of years. They will learn so much from those games. I'm opposed to the concept of the under-21 side entering the Checkatrade from a kind of Football League perspective, but from an academy perspective, I think it's such a great idea, and I think it's going to drive the quality of English clubs' academy output forward, and I think it's a good step. Do you, Carl, have any thoughts on the Checkatrade trophy and how clubs are using that now?
Yeah, I think I do get the controversy behind it. I do completely understand the lower level clubs feeling maybe undermined or undervalued by it. I do get that, and the traditionalist in me says that it's a bad thing. But if we're ever going to see development, we need these young players playing against adults. And it just, if they're not going to be sent on loan, or if people aren't ever going to want to give them that chance in the first team because they've not done it against adults, I can only think it's a good thing in that respect, to give them that sort of experience. I think at the moment, having it in the Checkatrade Cup of the Moment is a good thing, because it's not in the Football League, it's a separate competition, and it's a way of easing it in. I think it's the best of both worlds at the moment. It's a good compromise, but I can imagine problems if you start sticking them in the actual Football League, and people will get upset with that.
And rightly so. But I mean, like you say, there is a middle ground, which is the loan structure, and I'm sure we can talk a lot more about loans, probably in part two.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
But what I'm going to talk about now is it's kind of the hot topic in English football, which is young players leaving Premier League clubs and going abroad for opportunities. So from a Spurs perspective, this summer we've seen Nonny Madjuki, Keenan Bennett and Rio Griffiths all leave to go to European teams. But from a Premier League perspective, it's a much wider issue as such. So the big name, obviously, is Jadon Sancho, who's now playing Bundesliga football and has registered the most assists in top five European league, which is incredible. But there are other lesser known players, Panzo and Hines as well, who've gone abroad in search of opportunity. So the first thing I'd like to ask you, Kai, is why are young players leaving English clubs?
I think the main reason is obviously lack of opportunity. And that sort of depends on the manager of the club, really, because, like I said earlier, Sam Allardyce was a manager who never really wanted to give young players a chance. But, and there's managers who will, like, obviously Pochettino, he's given quite a few players debuts, since he's been around for you guys. And that sort of lack of opportunity, and it's sort of like a domino effect. One person goes abroad, and then other people see how well they're doing and follow suit. And Jadon Sancho, obviously last season he was involved, that was sort of, you could say maybe that was sort of the catalyst for most players, because I think more have gone abroad this season than last. But I think it's quite an admirable thing to do, because obviously they're young guys. It's a whole different country to them. It's brave, but it's paying off. I think Jonathan Panzer, he's a player who I really like. I'm a big fan of his. He's joined AS Monaco, and he's sort of in with a chance of making it there. And if he does, then that's brilliant, because not only he's doing well for his career, England as a country, surely that'll get him into the England senior team. And I, for one, hope he does, because I think he's one of the best young centre-backs we've got right now. So yeah.
Are there any West Ham players that have been linked with moves abroad over the last year, 18 months?
You know, not as much, maybe only on a loan basis. We've sort of got like, I'm not sure how, if it's sort of more prominent as it is now, VVV Venlo in Holland. We've obviously got Martin Samuelsson, but I won't really class him as an academy player. He's on loan there at the moment. Sam Westley was there, even though he was the academy manager's son. I'll say no more about that one. but there's players, obviously, Reece Oxford, that's the prime example. Mönchengladbach, they want to have him there on a permanent basis. And I read an interview, with a guy, I think it was at Schalke, or may have been another German team, it was a while. They're watching sort of young, like, under-18s, under-16s games in England. And I would imagine, I suppose, having that, if you're a player who's been called up by England internationally, there's more chance of you going abroad because you have more of that status, if that makes sense, as like Absolutely. A player who's gonna, has potential to get to the top. So I would assume, a few of our international youngsters will have interest from abroad.
Carl, what is it about these players that means they can't get opportunities for English clubs, and yet top European clubs are queuing up to sign some of them? What's going wrong?
I don't know. I think it's maybe a couple of things, actually. So I think in Europe they may just see things differently to England. So I think that in Europe it's more of a, you give a young person an opportunity, whereas in England we think of it as they have to wait for an opportunity and then take it. It's never actually the, I don't think in England we have that belief in young players. If you look at Sancho, for example, if he stayed at Man City, really and truly, he would not be in the England team now. When we were linked with him, he would have come in with zero experience, and he'd be going for the same thing over and over again of playing Premier League 2 football and maybe training with the first team. Yeah. Whereas when he went to Dortmund, it was a case of they handed him the number 7 shirt because they trusted him, and they gave him the opportunities to pay for the first team straight away because they believed in his talent and they saw an opportunity for him. I'm trying to think. So there's that's the main reason. I think it's just belief and trust. I think additionally there's a massive fallout from the pre-restructuring. So if we can think about when the type of players that were being produced before and who were just not up to scratch, I think there's so much distrust in the youth football still that they just don't think they are good enough to be playing for the first team. And I think that's sort of the hangover effect from such a poor system for the last how many years. I think those are the two main issues. And I think actually one final one is the money in football. I think there's so much money in the Premier League that when you can just go out and spend 25 million on an average player, but with experience, which sort of it's that false reliability, you'll rather do that than take the risk of paying a youngster who hasn't got any experience because they may do badly. When really and truly, I don't think experience matters that much, especially when you're buying average players. I think the top quality youngsters will more than make up for that. They might make a few mistakes in the first five matches, but then they'll prove their weight in gold and be so much more value, add so much more value to the club than once you start give them more than 10 games, so to speak. So I think it's money. And also, I think the European clubs appreciate the talent we have more. I remember Mönchengladbach's to football mentioned that we in England have the best age group from between 1999 and those born in 2001. Whereas in England, that's why they're going after our youngsters, because they see what we're doing. Whereas in England, we just don't appreciate it. Even though we've had this great year in 2017, I just don't think it's going to change that much because we just don't appreciate what we have.
I can only hope that the likes of Sancho making the England squad will change the mindset of some of the key people in charge of getting these young players opportunity in first teams, because it's clear the quality's there. You know, we've won basically everything at every age group for the last 18 months, which means our young players are technically better than the young players in the same age groups in all the other European leagues. I think it's difficult to argue against that. And yet, we would see signing an under-18 German player as a really exciting kind of signing. If Spurs were linked with an under-18 Spanish striker now, everyone would be saying, oh, you know, he's going to be a star, he's going to be a top-class player. And yet, we've probably got an equivalent player sat in our under-18s who people wouldn't be too excited about. And it's that kind of unknown. It's the idea of signing a player is still, for some reason, more exciting than promoting a youngster in the eyes of many. And I think slowly that needs to change, and we need to reassess how we view young players. And you used the term there, risk, and I think that's, in the eyes of fans, that's certainly still the term that I hear or see on Twitter in particular over and over again. Playing this young player is too much of a risk. When actually, you know, so in Spurs' case, we're playing Sissoko or we're playing Aurier, and they're having bad games, and yet they're keeping their place in the squad, in the team. Kyle Walker-Peters comes in and has two man-of-the-match performances, and yet playing him is seen as more of a risk than playing Aurier, who's actually had actively bad games. And that, to me, doesn't stack up, and the logic doesn't quite fit. And the only thing I can think that might be the rationale for persisting with Aurier, and don't get me wrong, I'm, you know, not actively against Aurier, I think he's fine. But the main reason I think they're sticking with him is because they paid 24 million or whatever for him, because he's on a high wage, because he's getting performance bonuses, and they want to keep him happy so that he doesn't disrupt the squad. Now, the mindset needs to change. We need to not sign players like that in the first place. Instead, utilise the young players we've got at our disposal and give them an opportunity. And, you know, it's not always going to work out, and that's fine. You know, we're going to have Jake Livermore, we're going to have Stephen Caulkers, and they're going to move on, and we're going to make millions from them, and that's absolutely fine. But we might have a Harry Winks or a Harry Kane. Oh, yeah, exactly. That's a success as well.
Could I just add...
Kai, please do.
We've got this whole culture of signing players, and like you said, just from the first team clubs, I'm going to say Chelsea, they're sort of known. They sign, they'll spend £30 million on pounds on like a left back from Italy. He's had a few good games. Bart Cozzi's, 26? He's a good player. And this sort of culture sort of seeps down into youth levels. Like, we're seeing sort of the transfer market. There's like a second transfer market under 18 level. And I think Manchester City, even us, we've signed players from abroad who will have a few international caps, but they're average. And we have better players already. And that's the sort of thing why I think that young players are going abroad. It sort of links to that. Because obviously we see players coming in from abroad, but you've got to remember, people in Germany will sort of see England how we see Germany, if that makes sense. And players sort of, it's sort of also like a publicity thing, because you'll put, let's say the club, they sign a Spain under 17 international for £1 million, and it goes on the website. All the fans are thinking, wow, this is brilliant. This guy is going to be the next whoever. Excellent stuff. They don't go to the under 18 games. They watch him. They don't see him putting in loads of averages, performances, blah, 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 not making it. But in the meantime, the young striker on the bench, was like 5 times better than him, and he could have had a shot. But no, clubs would rather sort of have this whole, you know, it's a bit like on Football Manager when you're scrolling through the under 19 teams of random countries and you sign a random player and they do absolutely awful, if that makes sense.
We've had people we've signed who aren't very good at going to the youth teams, and then what you'll get is people asking how they're getting on, because they're expecting that person to make it. And they might even just be from the club, like a tryout signing. I mean, bring them in, see there's some potential, but see how they're getting on. If you watch them regularly, they're not performing that well, and then they'll take the spot of another youngster who's just as good or better, but fans won't care about that because that youngster's always been there. There's that new person who costs money, it's like a shiny new toy. They're thinking, oh, what's going on for him? When's he gonna get it? And I do think it's like grass is always greener. I think I don't know if any of you guys have heard of him. His name's Stan King. He's another youth watcher, and he writes some good blogs. And he mentioned it too.
Yeah, he's excellent. Yeah.
About red wine tasting or wine tasting, and they did blindfold tests, and they gave exactly the same wine, and gave a blind test, and when they said one is more expensive than the other, people rated that as tasting better. And I think it's exactly the same situation you find in football in general and anywhere else. Is as soon as something comes with value to it, it instantly seen as better than what you already have.
That's such a great point, Carl. I think, and actually it makes me think straight away of Solly Koulibaly, who he came with such a big reputation. Do you remember him?
And what a player that was.
Honestly, I would get tweets every day at first about Solly Koulibaly. How's Koulibaly getting on? How's Koulibaly doing? You know, we had players in our academy at the same age group who were far better than Koulibaly, but because he came in with a reputation, they were only interested in hearing about him.
Just as an example of that, do you remember Shaquille Coulter, sir? I thought
yes,
strike initially, and I felt he had to make way, was pushed on the wings for Koulibaly. And then
I agree.
Quite right.
Was almost stifled for this young player, and then everyone would completely forget about him. And I thought he was a very decent player. But that's an example.
That's sort of what happens as well, because I think Courtois is a player. When he was around, I quite liked him as well, from my point of view. And it's happened at West Ham before. Obviously Tony Martinez, we signed him because he'd scored however many goals for Valencia's youth team. That's great, but that's for Valencia. That's not doing it for us. And Jamal Hector Ingram, who I mentioned earlier, I think he at the time was probably our best striker in the academy, and his development has been halted massively. Because the club has, like Martinez, we're basically signing him for the under-23s. And that's another thing that annoys me about PL2. Players are being signed just for the under-23s to fill in the gap. And anyway, Hector Ingram's development, I think it's, he hadn't had a loan. He's barely had under-23 game time, and he suffered because we've signed an average striker who scored loads against some poor Spanish teams. And that's what really annoys me.
I have to say, you guys, the passion that you guys are speaking about with this, makes me feel a bit better about how angry I get when I speak to people about youth football. So thank you for that. Thank you for that. We're going to wrap this up. We're going to talk a lot more about Spurs specifically in the second part of this podcast. But we're going to end on a few questions. So we had loads of questions from various people, but we'll start off with a question from Nathan, who's a regular on this podcast normally. He said, with John McDermott being linked to the England setup, are you worried? Carl, do you want to start on this? Would you be concerned if John McDermott were to leave Spurs to take up a role with England?
I'll be honest, I'm not too sure on this. Just for the plain fact, I don't know what other coaches or the quality of coaches that are out there that could replace McDermott. He seems to be doing an excellent job since he's come in. He heads up everything. The quality of players that have been produced under him have been outstanding in my point of view. So him leaving would be a very bad thing in my opinion. But I don't know who's out there that'd be able to replace him. For example, if we've got somebody in similar, I know there's other academies like Fulham have an excellent academy, even West Brom have an excellent academy. So I know there's other people out there that are producing top quality players, and they're from lesser academies, so to speak, that we could poach. I don't know who the heads of the academies are. So it'd be bad if he left. I just don't know. It'd be great for England, I think, but I'd be unable to say whether it'd be a bad thing or whether he'd be able to be replaced easily or not without too much knowledge of what else is out there.
That's a fair point. Do you know much about John McDermott, Kai? Presumably not so much.
I don't think not as much as you guys. I mean, I've heard good things. I think with the whole, there's like the boot system you guys have, where players kind of have certain colour boots. And something as simple as that, that's obviously gone a long way. And looking from the quality of players you've produced and you've got right now, he must be doing a good job. And the solution, I've got to say a special mention to Justin Cochrane. He's still with you guys, isn't he? I think he's a really good coach. And I'm not sure he'd be... Oh.
Where's he gone?
Brilliant.
Of course. Yeah, you're quite right.
This is what you've got to look at. Like, I'm personally sort of club over country. But looking, you've got to develop. Having a good coach in England setup will do well for. It's like you've got to be like a what's the word? Bit selfless and say, well, this is sort of for the greater good, if that makes sense. Having him go to England will probably have a good impact on English youth football as a whole.
It's the whole England DNA thing, isn't it? They want coaches to help choose players through each age group. I think what did Dan Ashworth say? It's the size of the shirt that changes. That's the only thing that should change. So you want to have the best coaches in England to be able to take advantage of the quality players you're getting. So it's sad that he's left, but it can only be good for England in that sense.
Spot on. So we'll end with one question from Mittal from Twitter. And Carl, you mentioned earlier that you see Livermore and Caulker as successes. Mittal says, in the last 20 years, we've produced three players who've gone on and been real players for Tottenham in Stephen Carr, Ledley King and Harry Kane. He said, I don't count players like Mason, Livermore, Caulker. I think it's a good return, but some might say it's low. What do you think? Carl, do you want to start? What do you think of Spurs' return in terms of the number of players they've developed over the past 20 years?
So I personally think, again, this is how it's going to come through. I think Livermore, the Masons and all that are successes. The Caucus, I think they're all successes. I feel that so prior to the academy revamp, we had, I think, Carr, King, Crouch, and you mentioned it, Sol Campbell. And I think as an output, as good an output as any other club had at that time. Since the revamp, we've had from the Mason age group and for about 5 years between the 1995 born to the 1990s, we produced about 10 players. I don't know, but that player might play for the first team at different levels. But now, since then, we're not really producing. I have my own opinion what's going on there. But their output isn't as good. But I think if you can get, I think it's possible to have, honestly, one per season to be integrated. But relative to over the course of 20 years, I think our output's as good as anyone else's. But I think we should be doing better, if I'm being honest.
I think the fact that Mason, Livermore and Caulker have all played for England shows that we're developing quality players. And, you know, even if we're saying they're the lower end of the players that we're producing, that's impressive. That the fact that the players that we're disappointed with are making international appearances has got to be a good thing. And of course, let's not forget we've sold them for big money as well. That money then goes back into the club, back into the transfer kitty, back into the academy, importantly. And it all comes full circle. Guys, we're going to leave it there and we're going to come back and we're going to talk more specifically about Spurs in part two. But before we go, I just want to give everyone your Twitter handle so that they can follow you. So, Carl, you're Carl It As I See It, which is one of my favourite Twitter handles.
Carl, you are
WHUFC Youth.
And also, I think for you guys, you might probably want to follow my personal account a bit more, KBarrett2316. Hopefully as well, I'm trying to get some more articles coming out. Some of you might remember me from last year. Windy retweeted my Under-17 World Cup preview, and hopefully I'll have more content coming out in the future.
Awesome. Thank you both so much. Very much appreciated. If anyone else is interested in more about youth football, email us at the extra inch at thefightingcop.co.uk. Beg for Kai and Carl to come back on and we'll happily do more youth football podcasts in the future. For now, that's it for this episode. We'll see you in part two. It's the fighting clock. It's the fighting. It's the fighting clock.
Oh, that was really interesting, mate, yeah.